Health and Fitness. I'm health integrationist Lena Berman, and I come to you every week to discuss self-care and integrated health. Adrenal burnout. We hear this phrase as an explanation for a variety of symptoms, but what is it actually? Since the balance of what we experience physically is a house of cards with all of our glands, organs, and systems holding each other up, what happens when something pulls one of the cards out? Fatigue is a concept that most of us understand, but what do we need to do for ourselves? That's less obvious. Would it surprise you to discover that many of the things we do to get through are perpetrating a syndrome that has become an epidemic? Adrenal fatigue is the topic of today's interview with Dr. James Wilson, and it's the title of his new book. Dr. Wilson has helped hundreds of people with adrenal fatigue regain their health and vitality during his 24 years of private practice. And for the last 10 years, he's also lectured extensively to physicians and is acknowledged as an expert on adrenal function and other endocrine imbalances and their impact on health. He's one of the few people to hold 3 doctorate degrees. 3? Good heavens. When do you have time to have a private practice? And 2 master's degrees, all from different disciplines. I'm thinking you're 90 years old, but you don't look 90 in your picture. It must be your adrenal health. He received his PhD in human nutrition from the University of Arizona with minors in immunology, microbiology, pharmacology, and toxicology. In addition, he holds degrees as a doctor of chiropractic and a doctor of naturopathic medicine. His master's degrees are in bionutrition and experimental psychology. Dr. Wilson was also one of 14 founding fathers of the Canadian College of Naturopathic Medicine in Toronto, Ontario. He's listed in the international who's who in medicine and currently resides in Tucson, Arizona. Welcome to you.
Thank you, Lana. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you here. And it's so gracious that, I mean, it all just worked out that Smart Publications, who published your book, made copies available to us on such short notice, and you made these also available to us, so thank you for that. I think that most of the people who listen to the show understand that there are a series of stress responses or startle responses that affect the adrenal cortex or the adrenal glands, that there is a series of reactions that happen and a series of adaptations. And that sort of the secondary wave of response is this hormone called cortisol, which is one of the major players in this discussion of adrenal fatigue, since there is a point where you stop making sufficient cortisol. And that's one of the ways we can flag this.
That's very true. Yeah. First of all, there may be a few people out there that don't know what the adrenal glands are. They're 2 glands that sit over your kidneys. They secrete 26 different hormones, and they're about the size of a walnut. The adrenal glands are necessary for life, and if you don't have them, you can't live. But there's other things that people may not know about it. Of course, adrenaline. Everyone knows about adrenaline. Cortisol is a very important hormone to regulate protein, carbohydrate, and fat metabolism. It's important in keeping blood sugar normal in the bloodstream. And the other hormones secreted by the adrenal gland act as antioxidants and, as a matter of fact, are major contributors to the sex hormones, being the only source of male hormones in the female and the only source of female hormones in the male.
In this book, you've done a really great job of describing the important interactions, as you just say, between our adrenal glands and our vitality. Since all of these hormones interact with each other. You also offer some possible explanations for why adrenal fatigue and lowered cortisol levels will hit one person harder than another. But I think it may be important to also discuss high cortisol levels, since they often precede the syndrome of adrenal fatigue.
That's right. That was first noted in 1937 by Hans Selye, who show that when people are under stress, or animals are under stress, then the first thing that happens is they have a dip in their cortisol levels, but they recover, and their cortisol levels are actually higher than normal. For example, in a study done with hospital emergency room staff, they found the doctors had 3 to 4 times the normal cortisol levels, but they were totally unaware that they had any elevated cortisol levels because the body was compensating for the extra stress that the doctors were under. So at first, the person, many times under stress, has elevated cortisol levels. But as that continues, the adrenals are pumping out as fast as they can, and they can be overwhelmed. If another stress happens or it continues too long, then they can go into a slide. Oftentimes, I'll get a patient who is able to compensate. They're able to have this pedal-to-the-metal mentality. They're able to sleep a few hours, not eat good food, keep up a frenetic pace, but then something happens. It could be an infection. It could be their husband or wife leaves them. It could be something, an accident, and bingo. That's when they go into adrenal fatigue. And when they go into the adrenal fatigue, then a lot of times the adrenals don't just recover and get them back again. They're already exhausted from running as hard as they can run. And then when they have that extra stress, they go down and they can't recover. And that's when the adrenal fatigue pattern sets in.
So what we're saying is there's a straw that breaks the camel's back, finally, to use an unfortunate metaphor.
Well, it's for animal one of the cartoons in the book, isn't it?
So part of what we're talking about here is the important impact of infectious agents. The reason I mention this is because in my own practice, what I see very often is that someone will say they were doing just fine, and then suddenly they got this terrible flu, and they never recovered.
That's right.
So what's going on there?
Well, what happens a lot of times, and first of all, there's a very intimate association of the adrenal glands with the respiratory tract. As a matter of fact, it's so important that if someone doesn't have sufficient amounts of cortisol as an embryo, their lungs don't develop. So there's a very intimate connection there hormonally with the respiratory system and the adrenals. But more importantly, once someone is affected with respiratory ailments, it has a detrimental effect on the adrenal glands, and it makes it more difficult for it to recover. Parenthetically, when the adrenal glands themselves are weak, people are much more vulnerable to respiratory infections. And how we can tell, it's a lot of times an adrenal fatigue syndrome, and we'll get into some of the specific signs and symptoms quickly, but one of the ways we can tell, it takes them a lot longer to recover from this respiratory illness than it normally should, or than it previously had in that person.
Is part of that because of cortisol's important effect of reducing inflammation?
Actually, it's part of the reducing inflammation, and it also, cortisol has a very good function in stimulating lymphocyte activity, too. So the recovery from the infection, the activity against the infection, as well as all the compensating mechanisms that the adrenals and the cortisol specifically does, are involved.
Now, we're talking about some of the things that would make someone susceptible, and one of the factors is this gradual acquisition of lots of little respiratory infections and infectious agents, but might also some kind of opportunistic infection that's difficult to resolve cause adrenal fatigue by itself? In other words, we're talking about a kind of chicken-egg thing, but there are people more and more who are picking up these very difficult-to-trace bacterial and viral infections that are reoccurring. Retroviruses and mycoplasmal bacterial infections that, you know, are being implicated in. I mean, simplistically, we've talked about Lyme disease on this show. We've got HIV, but there's also suspicion of things in chronic fatigue and gastrointestinal diseases as well. So, could not the acquisition of one of those difficult to treat opportunistic infection, in fact, cause the adrenal crash?
Absolutely. When the adrenals are up against one of these we call them subclinical infections. When they're up against one of these subclinical infections, they actually are suppressed with this, and so it makes it very difficult for the person to recover because they have two things working against them. They have the partial suppression of the immune system, which doesn't allow them to totally get over this problem, and they have the partial suppression of the adrenals, which makes them feel very tired. And it's a cyclic chicken-egg situation, like you say. So in treating chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, some of these other pathogenic organisms lodging in the body, we have to treat the infection as well as treat the adrenals for full recovery.
There's also a very, very powerful interplay between the sex hormones and other parts of the endocrine system, like the thyroid.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the prevalence now that we're seeing of autoimmune problems in the thyroid and in other parts of the body, and would that not also predispose someone?
It's again a chicken and eggs situation, because we have the adrenal glands being the anti-inflammatories like you were talking about. Then when you have an autoimmune situation and you don't have the anti-inflammatories that the adrenals normally secrete, then you get a flagrant blow-up of these autoimmune problems, a very quick spreading, and it's difficult to control. And so as a result, unfortunately, then they give them corticosteroids. And what happens in that case then, it totally suppresses the adrenal glands. So the adrenal glands now are totally suppressed, not able to respond because they've been suppressed by the corticosteroid, and the person is being maintained. When, as soon as the corticosteroids are withdrawn, then the person a lot of times has a ballooning of the signs and symptoms. And so it is difficult. But on the other hand, treating the adrenal glands to strengthen them helps to decrease the autoimmune situation. And recovery is a lot easier when the adrenals are strengthened.
This, you know, this goes back to something that I say inevitably to people. It's almost the first, it's one of the first things I ask people is, how much do you sleep? And we just did a show on sleep, and it's amazing how proud people are of not needing to sleep, and how they, as you say, pedal to the metal. I mean, there's just this kind of terrible mass psychosis that we're all engaged in. Well, I wouldn't say all. I think people are starting to see it, but it is the single easiest thing that you can do. It's not always the easiest, because when people get ill, it's hard for them to sleep. And you mentioned also that the more fatigued you are, the harder it is for you to sleep. So it gets worse and worse. But you just sort of jumped a little bit ahead by talking about what conventional medicine does for adrenal fatigue and the problem with that. So why don't we go ahead and finish that before we talk about diagnosing?
Sure. What would you like to explore?
Well, you just said that using the glucocorticoid steroids, specifically the synthetic ones, can really give you make a situation worse, make a bad situation worse, no?
When someone takes corticosteroids, then they're mediated by the hypothalamus, one of the glands that sits in the base of the brain. And because the hypothalamus senses that it has a cortisol-like substance circulating, then it tells the adrenal glands to relax. Basically, it puts them to sleep. So the adrenal glands then become unresponsive. And when this happens, several other things happen too, because the cortisol is a trigger for several other hormones in the immune system and in the endocrines. And what happens then is the lack of sex hormones and aldosterone, which is a soul-preserving hormone, other things like this can come into play. So you can get into a myriad of problems. And, of course, there's a tendency in giving corticosteroids for the doctors to overprescribe, so they're taking too much. And the overproduction or the over-circulation of these corticosteroids, the synthetics and the naturals, as a matter of fact, can do tremendous damage to the system. The list goes on and on and on and on when you check the facts and comparisons of drugs or some of the other reference manuals about the side reactions of the corticosteroids. But what happened in the poor adrenal glands is that they're basically non-functional, and they don't just rise back again when someone tapers off. That's why you have to taper off on the corticosteroids. If you just quit all of a sudden, the adrenals can't just respond all of a sudden. And so the people are left often between a rock and a hard spot. They don't want to come off the corticosteroids, but at the same time, it takes a long time for the adrenal glands to recover, and they're in a state of distress. That's why, if they can avoid it, it's better to do it naturally than it is to do it synthetically.
You're listening to an interview with Dr. James Wilson, who is a naturopathic physician, a chiropractic physician, and a researcher and PhD, has several doctorates. He's written a book called Adrenal Fatigue. I'm Lena Berman. This is Your Own Health and Fitness, and we are offering copies of this book at I just raised the pledge amount here, sort of ad hoc. No, it's actually 80. See, it's a special today, 80 instead of 90. For an $80 pledge to KPFA, which is slightly above our normal $60 a year pledge, you will get a thank you gift for becoming a member of KPFA, which is a copy of this 300-page book, which will give you in detail a lot of what we're talking about now, and in addition, even more information, because we're going to have to sort of synthesize what we're what's in the book. But if you give us a call during this hour at 510-848-5732, or you can go to the 800 number, which is 439-5732. If you call during this hour, we'll give you a copy of Dr. Wilson's book along with your pledge. So, $80. The diagnosis of adrenal fatigue is often missed by conventional medicine, and one of the reasons is because conventional medicine relies on often blood tests. And this is always, I've always found this problematic for anything that's hormone-like, or indeed a hormone. Do you want to explain why it's so difficult with hormones to see what's going on in the blood?
There's a couple of reasons for it. And before we get too far, I want to get into some of the major signs and symptoms of the adrenal fatigue. But let's do talk about the blood and the difficulties with a blood exam. Imagine the bloodstream is like a highway. It's products on their way somewhere. So we have the blood cells carrying these different hormones, or they may be circulating pre, and they're on their way somewhere. They're not in a tissue. They're not actively doing anything. They're on their way somewhere. And so that makes it more difficult to tell what's really going on in the tissue. One of the other difficulties is that the blood tests have a statistical norm that may not be the physiological norm. So in other words, it doesn't matter what the person's experiencing as far as signs and symptoms go. If they're less than 97% of the population, more or less than 97% of the population, they don't score outside the normal range. So you've got to be very high or very low for it to score, no matter what you're experiencing. Another problem is that blood can't talk about receptor site sensitivity or the number of receptors that receive the hormones. So just because the hormone's there doesn't mean the receptor sites are, or that they're open and they can receive that particular hormone. A more accurate way to measure tissue levels of the hormone is the salivary hormone. This is a very easy test to do. It's a salivary hormone test. All someone has to do basically is put some saliva in a vial and send it off to a lab. As a matter of fact, many of the saliva labs don't require a doctor's prescription to even do it, and it's inexpensive, about $100 or so, so that the person can actually keep track of their own cortisol, or for that matter, all the steroids or most of the steroid hormones themselves. I think it's good to have a doctor's interpretation or a health practitioner's interpretation, because there is definitely some wisdom that goes along with the interpretation. But the actual numbers, the person can keep track of themselves for a very reasonable fee.
Yeah, and it doesn't require bleeding or... No. The other problem with blood tests, and you mentioned this in your book, and I've heard this before, is that there's a optimal time to check levels of hormones, particularly cortisol, and that's usually in the morning, although cortisol levels can be checked throughout the day. But one of the problems is that people will just sort of breeze in to a laboratory to get their blood drawn at different times of the day that may not be optimal.
That's right.
So that's another problem. And with a saliva test, you can do it exactly when you need to do it. So why don't you go ahead and talk about some of the symptoms that you see that sometimes... Why don't you specifically focus on the ones that are not obvious? I mean, people certainly understand if they're exhausted.
Okay, sure.
But yeah. Why don't you do the ones that are missed, because they don't... Usually people don't think of them as being adrenal.
One of the things... Let's talk about the energy pattern. First of all, the kind of fatigue is a unique type of fatigue with adrenal fatigue. It's a person that has difficulty getting up in the morning. And if they get up, they still don't feel well rested. When they, as they take their noon meal, a lot of times they become a little bit better. But then between 2 and 4, a lot of times they have a weakness, a feeling like they'd like to lay down and take a little nap, or a tiredness, a slowness, mentally slow. But then around 6 o'clock, they get a second wind. And that's usually when they feel their best, after their evening meal or the 6 o'clock hour.
What is the cause? Why does that happen?
You know, that's not exactly clear.
Okay.
I read 2,400 different articles to
write. You're forgiven.
and it didn't come out clearly why this is, because cortisol levels are actually fairly low during that time. They continue to get lower during the night, but they're low during this time. But the person always feels better. And then other things they may find, they may have increased effort to do everything. All the tests seem like they take more effort than they used to. If they get sick, they may have more difficulty recovering. They may have their decreased ability to handle stress during the days. They may have longer time to recover from injuries or illnesses. They have longer time to think things through. Their mentation seems to be a little bit slower. So there are many of these kind of symptoms that are kind of vague. Another thing that's a real key is that they get 11 o'clock, what we call second wind, at night. If they don't go to bed by 10:30 or 11, they get a second wind, and they want to stay up until 1 or 2 in the morning, and then they want to sleep in the next morning and don't want to get up. This is a very typical adrenal fatigue pattern. And as a matter of fact, I start my book out with an illustration of someone from Silicon Valley who was a very typical, she could be the poster child for adrenal fatigue. As I said, there's a reason why there are showers and beds in some of the facilities here that people work in. They're almost encouraging adrenal fatigue.
Yeah, oh boy, there's no question. I always used to say that I always felt like when you leave work and you're working in a large corporation like that, that they really ought to unhook, you know, the IV bottle that they have that's draining your blood out and hand you a cookie and a glass of orange juice, which is actually not what you should eat when you're fatigued, adrenals are fatigued, but I'm you know, just like you're giving blood at the office. There are some other things that I've observed with adrenal fatigue that are confusing for people. One of the main ones is people waking up during the night. They go to sleep fine, and then they wake up during the night, and they're sweating. And this is something that people will notice if they have a virus as well, waking up with a little sweat on the back of the neck.
Mm-hmm.
And people often think that this is some kind of estrogen deficiency or something, and it may be, but it happens to men too. And I think that this is very often an adrenal problem. And particularly this thing you say of becoming like this kind of getting so tired that you get wired is a little bit like a kid who goes past their bedtime and then they're just completely out of control. I've mentioned this before in the air, but Chinese medicine talks about the fact that your nourishing energy is the feminine energy is in the lower part of your body, and that when you deplete that energy, that your energy sort of shoots up through the top of your head and you get really, really speedy. And I think that's part of what you're talking about. You get so tired, you then get sort of wired.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of the kidney yang symptoms in acupuncture
exactly
relate right to adrenal fatigue.
That's right, mm-hmm. and deficient yin and stuff. You have a couple of very interesting self-diagnostic tests in the book, pupil dilation tests, checking your blood pressure, checking your temperature. Do those things change significantly if somebody's adrenal glands begin to heal? Do you see a big change? I've noticed that some people who are cold a lot, even after they've gotten better, still have a tendency toward a low temperature. They don't feel cold. Their hands are warm, but their basal temperature is still low.
Well, they may have also a thyroid, a subclinical thyroid condition, too, because the adrenals and the thyroid are the two major glands that cause the coldness in there. But, yes, as people change, and by the way, people can recover from adrenal fatigue. It's a very important thing to realize that people can recover. The book was written because it's a self-help manual to help people determine if they have the syndrome, if it's mild, moderate, or severe. There's a questionnaire they can take. There's also a total program in there to help themselves. And then in the back of the book, there's a physiology section to understand. If they want to understand it, they can even understand the entire physiology of adrenal fatigue. But If they follow their symptoms, they'll find that these symptoms, as they improve, their symptoms disappear. And if they look at these different tests that we have, the tests they can do at home for the blood pressure and the iris contraction, they'll see that as they improve, that those become normal too. So, yes, you can follow this. This isn't lifelong, and these are valid signs and clinical tests that have been around for 50 years.
I want to go back to what you said about thyroid, because cortisol and thyroid are linked. If your cortisol is very low, you may in fact get a sort of functional thyroid deficiency because your body won't convert your T4 thyroid hormone into an active form, T3. It just won't be able to do it. And then you'll feel low thyroid. And one of the dangers here is that if you really are suffering from more of a problem with your adrenals than you are with your thyroid, and a doctor goes, well, you know, you're not showing low thyroid on your blood tests, but, you know, and this is a whole other show, which we'll do next week, but Maybe they're not testing far enough, but even if they do all the tests for thyroid and they go, everything's really normal, but I'm going to give you the thyroid medication anyway, or the thyroid hormone anyway. The danger here is that adding the extra thyroid is a metabolic stimulant, and if someone is suffering from an adrenal collapse, you don't want to overstimulate them. Am I right?
No, that's true. As a matter of fact, one of the ways you can tell if there's probably an adrenal component in here is if someone looks low thyroid, or they have some indication of low thyroid in the blood, and the doctor prescribes thyroid medication, and they don't respond. In most of the cases, then the adrenal component is there. And once they strengthen the adrenal gland, then the thyroid then strengthens as well, and the person responds.
Yeah, because there's a real interaction between the two. We're going to need to take a brief musical break. We'll be right back, so don't go away. Welcome back. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman. The book is Adrenal Fatigue, and my guest is James Wilson, ND, DC, and PhD. We're talking about adrenal fatigue. One of the things that I think really is useful in your book is you do something which is very close to my heart, because I try to do this too, which is you talk on a very accessible level about the fact that you have choices in life. Because I think that what people forget, especially when they're fatigued and their margins are shorter, is you begin to feel helpless. And as we know from Hans Selye's research, helplessness is the most corrosive form of stress.
It's actually a sense of helplessness was the worst of all the different emotions on the adrenal gland that caused the most destruction and the quickest decline in the adrenal glands. And that is an important thing. There's so many things that people can do to help themselves. That's why most of the book is devoted toward what you can do to help yourself. But, of course, changing the way you look at things is an important thing. That if someone, for example, is stressed at work and they're involved what I call sandwich stress, where they have stress from above and stress from below, and they have a sense of powerlessness about what to do about this, then they can look at themselves, instead of being caught in this all the time in this frantic thing, they can sit back and maybe take another angle. For example, they could look at themselves as training for another job, and they could decide then to look for another job that wouldn't be so stressful, that they could actually leave that situation. In the book, it talks about a three-choice paradigm of any situation. You can either change the situation to fit your needs, you can change, you yourself can change to fit the situation, or you can leave the situation. And usually, one of these three things are possible. However, people have tendencies to stay stuck in particular patterns, and so it keeps themselves from changing. But if you can imagine, I'll give you a good example. About 2 years ago, I was taken off in an airplane, and the airplane was really rough. It was a commercial airplane, but they hit some air pockets soon after we took off. And so it was like riding a bucking bronco. It was actually, for me, it was a lot of fun. So as I'm enjoying this bucking ride, gaining altitude, I looked over, and there's terror on the woman next to me. And she's looking, and she says, "You are enjoying this?" And I said, "Oh, this is great." And she says, "I think I'm going to throw up. I can't stand this." And she was barely able to talk with the stress. Well, the same thing was happening to both of us. And it could have been me on the other side and her on this side. It wouldn't have made a difference who it was happening to. It's just that the way one person was looking at it and experiencing it was so different than the way the other person was experiencing it. And they were both experiencing the same thing. And so part of the book is devoted to how you can change yourself to be more receptive to these pleasant experiences and not so open to the unpleasant experiences that a lot of times people choose.
Well, there are two things that I want to say about that. The first is that what you're describing is that there are things you can do yourself, taking responsibility yourself for changing the situation. There is nothing in those choices that says that if you become incredibly shrill and annoying that people will adjust to your needs. And in fact, if you do that, what will happen is you will not only not get sympathy, but you will have lots more reasons to be stressed out, because people will hate you and accuse you of being a hypochondriac and all kinds of nasty things, which will feed into the second thing, which is my own observation is that one of the problems with adrenal fatigue is that it often starts in childhood. And this is a very sad state of affairs in our country when children are so unhappy and so much not getting what they need. And it isn't across the board, but certainly I see over and over again in the people who come to talk to me about health that they've had very sad childhoods and in many cases were very afraid. In that situation, I really wonder how much more difficult it is to heal, and whether or not, the problem here is that inner work, working on yourself and beginning to unwind and reframe the trauma or the fear or the pain or the exhaustion. Some people are a moving target,
Yeah.
Literally, they can't stop because there's too much anxiety when they stop. So sometimes there are enough psychological stuff so that even the inner work itself is exhausting. And maybe, that's, I'm just saying that it adds an extra load to the healing process.
It is. And a lot of times, when you are doing some of this work, when you work with the adrenal glands, when you give the adrenal glands what they need, you're much more able to go through this situation easily rather than for it to seem like it's going to be the death of you. It seems to pass rather easily. And so when people are going through therapies, I definitely recommend that they strengthen their adrenals, especially if they feel wrung out or strung out or depleted by the therapy. Then their adrenals are being baffed, and they can do a lot of things to strengthen them. They can take, for example, simple things. They can take extra vitamin C with bioflavonoids. A lot of extra vitamin C is needed by many people with adrenal fatigue. I've had people that needed 20 grams a day to be stable with adrenal fatigue. Other people, 2 or 3 grams, so it's individual. But another thing they can do besides the vitamin C is take magnesium. Magnesium, usually in the form of citrate, because it's easily assimilated.
Or soak in a Epsom salt bath if you're having a bowel tolerance problem with the magnesium.
Well, see, if they're having a bowel tolerance problem with the magnesium, that means they're not absorbing the magnesium, and they probably have a lack of digestive juices to absorb to break down those proteins or break down the magnesium in the first place to give it an acid medium.
That could be. Mm-hmm.
And so a source of magnesium is good. Now, nuts and seeds are high in magnesium, as well as sea vegetables are very high in magnesium.
Well, no, caution. I just wanted to add about sea vegetables is it is my observation that if you do the right amount of iodine from these sea vegetables and kelp, you can stimulate thyroid function. If you do too much, you can actually blow your thyroid out with too much iodine, because I see people really loading on the kelp and whatnot. And,
okay.
Yeah,
so we want to be cautionary about that. And we also want to be cautionary about it's best to take chlorella and vitamin C with the sea vegetables, because a lot of them have a little bit of mercury in them. And so I don't want to be too heavy on it, but it is another source of magnesium.
Well, do you have a problem with soaking in Epsom salts? Because I think getting it through the skin is a great way to do it.
It's just the quantity that a lot of people need for magnesium.
Right.
Of magnesium isn't accessible when you do that.
No, I'm not talking about it. I'm not talking about it instead. I'm talking about an addition.
Oh, sure. Oh, certainly.
And then also, you and I are kind of almost on the same page with diet, but not entirely. So when people get a copy of the book, because I think a lot of people will in response to the show, and I think that would be, it's a good resource book. They're going to notice that we don't agree completely on diet. I think we're close. I think adding in more protein is terribly important, but my own experience is that people with really bad adrenal fatigue do better without eating grains. You do talk about food sensitivities,
Yeah. Though,
and allergies and carbohydrate addiction and things like that. So we're pretty close, but I think I would suggest probably even more of a protein, fat, vegetable-based diet rather than a starch, adding the starches in.
The listeners may not be aware of what we're talking about. So in the book, what I say is that we need a fat, a protein, and a carbohydrate at every meal, because the people I've treated with adrenal fatigue, as well as other doctors in the past, have found that this seems to be the best combination. Now, that's not a refined carbohydrate. It's an unrefined carbohydrate. And you hit on an interesting point, because as someone becomes more severely adrenal deficient, they become less able to handle carbohydrates. And so you have to switch to the more predominant fats, proteins, and vegetables. And as they get better, you can usually introduce the grains again in smaller or larger quantities, depending on how severe they are.
Exercise. I'm so grateful to you for talking about exercise. People don't feel like exercising when they're fatigued, but explain why it's so important. I certainly have until I'm blue in the face. Maybe they'll listen to you.
We could go on forever about the values of exercise, but there's so many aspects. First of all, exercise raises cortisol levels. Now, cortisol has a tendency to drop in the afternoon, and that's why they get the 2 to 4 low. It's that the cortisol levels in people with adrenal fatigue drop lower. But if they exercise around 2 o'clock, then that's going to help the cortisol levels be a little bit higher. But in addition to that, exercise helps detoxify the liver. It puts more nutrients into the system. It makes more oxygen go to the cells. It takes away carbon dioxide and other waste materials away from the cell. Our human bodies are meant to move. Look at the way we're built. We have 26 movable vertebrae. We have all these different joints and the flexibility in our joints. We are meant to move. We're meant to be people of motion. And this modern society that encourages non-movement is very, it's a very strict departure from what we've known in the past.
You also talk about light by way of talking about what time you go to sleep in terms of adrenal function. Again, about the benefits of if you can get away with it, staying in bed till maybe 8 or 9 because of the way your adrenal cortisol levels change during the day and getting, if you can, get to bed before 11.
Mm-hmm.
So it strikes me, I'm wondering whether if people have a low, if you're self-employed or if they have they have an office with a nap place they can nap, do you suggest that people nap if they feel sleepy between 1 and 3, or do you suggest that actually that they not nap but get a little exercise?
No, if they can, it's best to me for them to mildly exercise. And people with severe adrenal fatigue or moderate adrenal fatigue will exercise, feel better for about an hour, and then they'll feel tired again. And so what they need to do at that point is to lie down. See, I mean, there's a fatigue factor. So fatigue is saying, please rest. So when they have these times of feeling low, 10 o'clock and 2 o'clock and to 4 o'clock are the most important things. The people with Dr. Pepper really hit it right on the button, 10, 2, and 4 each day. Then if they can lie down and rest rather than just sit somewhere, it's much more refreshing. If they can take a little nap in the afternoon, it's much more rejuvenating for people with adrenal fatigue to do.
Okay, and then we're in the middle of winter here. We're not in the middle of winter, but we're having an early winter in California. We're having lots of storms, so we've had lots of darkness, and people get very sleepy when it's dark because they're not getting enough stimulation with the light, with the thyroid and stuff, and I'm sure this affects the adrenals as well.
It does, but again, I would say listen to your body and rest as much as you can. If you can sleep in the morning, make your activity level just a little bit less. And another thing that's important too, Lanya, when they're relaxing, when they're doing something for relaxation, I've noticed that the patterns of relaxation have changed over the past 30 years. That people don't relax in the same way that they used to. When they're relaxing, a lot of times they're pedal to the metal, the same as if they're on full guard.
Yeah, they play hard.
Yeah, they play hard and they don't rest. So relaxation means resting. Not even watching TV, but having a book is relaxing. Meditation, of course, is relaxing.
Mm-hmm.
Doing nothing, just piddling or puddling around.
Doing
the house.
Nothing is the best.
It really is.
Just having unstructured time. I was so glad you said that in the book.
Yeah, and this unstructured time is very healing because it gives the chance of the adrenal glands to kind of respond and to rest and not have to be meeting all these different demands. You know, the adrenals have to meet all the different kinds of stresses. They have to meet the psychological, the physiological, the emotional, the biochemical, the internal, the external. They have to meet all the different stresses. And the less we can stress them, the less demand we can place on them. And the more we can feed them, the more we can give them the nutrients they need to rebuild, the better chance we have to heal.
Yeah. I'm going to have to let you go reluctantly. But thank you for writing a book that encourages us to be kind
sure.
to ourselves.
And I'd like to say hello to my son, Dylan, who works at Pixo. And maybe you could tell him about the adrenal website. Do you have any information?
Go ahead.
About that? It's adrenalfatigue.org. Okay. It's not fully functional yet, and it'll get more functional in the next 2 weeks. Adrenalfatigue.org.
Adrenalfatigue.org. Thank you, James Wilson, author of Adrenal Fatigue. Keep up the good work.
Thanks very much.
Again,
I appreciate it, and I enjoyed being on your show.
Me too. I want to thank you all for listening. I'm Lena Berman. If you need more information or you want a CD copy of this or any other in the series, Your Own Health and Fitness, you can call my information number 24 hours a day at 707-874-2772. For a list of other available shows, information about guests, and news about the nonprofit and the benefits of membership, go to the website, yourownhealthandfitness.org. Your Own Health and Fitness is a joint production of Your Own Health and Fitness and KPFA-FM. The engineer for Your Own Health and Fitness today is Mick Mylan. Remember, being informed not only protects your health, it protects your freedom.